This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Hurd, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm offended. I'm offended by my friends on the other side of the political aisle saying this is political theater. This is not political theater. For me, this is serious. I spent 9.5 years as an undercover officer in the CIA. I was the guy in the back alleys collecting intelligence, passing it to lawmakers. I've seen my friends killed. I've seen assets put themselves in harm's way. And this is about protecting information, the most sensitive information the American government has. And I wish my colleagues would take this a little bit more seriously.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American that I'm talking about? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on, of course, with the totalitarians. And that's why you listen to this radio show, so we can give you a clue as to what they are doing and what you can do about it. And again, it comes down to one person at a time. And as we're finding out, billions of dollars cannot buy you the universe like you think you can. Like, and I'm talking about Jeff Bezos trying to knock off Judge Roy Moore, which is kind of interesting. Similar to how he was trying to do that with Trump and the dossier. Remember that Jeff Bezos owns Amazon, of course, but he also owns the Washington Post. And who dropped the dime? So-called sex scandal for Roy Moore 35, 40 years ago? Really? Anyway, so that is just some of the stuff that we're covering. We're also covering right now the church shooting that took place on Sunday in Sutherland, Texas. And right now we have with us someone who is very, very special, and that's Vonda Smith. And Vonda Smith, who actually lives there very close by the church in Sutherland, is with us, and she has, quite a story to tell. Vonda, welcome to Agenda 21 Radio.
Hi, thank you. Just to make a correction real quick, we're called Sutherland Springs,
Sutherland Texas. Springs. Okay, so mm-hmm. It's interesting, some of the publications say Sutherland.
Yep, I've read that. So, nobody can get us right.
Well, we will definitely get you right here on Agenda 21 Radio. Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Correct.
And you have been interviewed on Fox News and other places because you have some very interesting information to tell that other people are not sort of getting, I guess the general public isn't getting, and that's why you're on Agenda 21 Radio, because we give information that other people don't get through the general media. So tell us about how your relationship to the Sutherland Springs Church shooting.
I knew one of the women that was killed in the shooting. Her name is Joanne Ward. When I moved to the area 4 years ago, I met her, and I didn't know anyone in the area at all. So I got onto Facebook and just met her there. She was one of the most welcoming people. She was admining her own pages there, and she just welcomed me and just made me feel accepted, made sure that I met plenty of other people. And this was all online. After talking with her for a while, you know, we became in real life friends. We met and we'd go to lunch and breakfast, and we went to each other's birthday parties, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell
us how I met her.
Tell us a little bit about Sutherland Springs, Texas, because it's very unique. And if you take a look at it, it's not a big town.
It's not. I mean, if you pass through and blink your eyes, you miss it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally a flashing light, not even a red stoplight or anything. It's a flashing light. We have a post office, a church, two gas stations, and one Dollar General store. That is, and that's just been recently. So we're big time,
I was just going to say that's big time when you got Dollar General there.
It was, believe me. That's like having a little bitty Walmart, you know, mm-hmm.
So you came out as part of the oil boom. Is that where you came from? Okay.
Yeah, it's in the Eagle Ford Shale, and that's where we had to relocate. So I'm right down the road in Stockdale. It's right next door, like 3 miles away from Sutherland Springs.
Right.
So.
And then is it San Antonio is the closest big city center?
Yeah, we're about 1 hour away from the big city of San Antonio. We're southeast.
Okay, so I'm just trying to get people to be oriented to, where you are located and, what kind of assets you would have as a town, which doesn't sound like you.
Right.
It sounds like very, very sparse. Especially,
limited.
I've been through those towns in Texas where they've got the blinking light and got to stop.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, there's no police force here. There's just sheriff, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
No fire department even in this little town.
Really? Is there
none.
Like a volunteer fire department or just things burn?
Yeah, it's basically local area. I don't even know if they that's a shame. I don't even know if they have a volunteer fire department here because there's no fire truck. It's in the adjoining towns.
Mm.
Lavernia, Stockdale, Floresville. Those are the towns.
So
that
could be quite a little drive over there, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, 30 minutes to respond.
Yeah.
Wow.
10 to 15.
So I'm trying to draw the picture to people because isolation seems to be one of the things that's maybe playing out here as we.
Oh, they picked the right town for that if that's what they were going for.
Mm-hmm. 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 So strategically, and again, we all have our tinfoil hats here on Agenda 21 Radio. We're all proud wearers of tinfoil hats, I might add, because we do think here on the show. Go figure.
I was making mine this morning. I don't have one yet, so I'm mine. I have so much to learn from you, so don't talk to me about anything that I don't know about.
Okay. All right.
I
don't know about that, but the key thing is that last Sunday, you're very intimately involved in the shooting in the sense that you're out on the periphery. No one in your family was hurt, but in your friend's family... That was not the case. Tell us about what happened on that Sunday, last Sunday.
That last Sunday, we got the news. We got a phone call saying that there was a shooting in Sutherland Springs. And immediately I jumped up and said, I don't know who wants to go with me, but we're going to go help down there and whatever they need. There's going to be a huge need. So we were on our way out. My husband and I, and we got another call saying that Joanne had been shot in the shooting. Well, that just changed the whole plan, and we immediately, went to the hospital where we found out she would be at. When we got there, she wasn't there. We were told that she was there, and we just kept getting the runaround. We didn't know where in the world she was located, or her daughter, Brooke, who's five. those are the two that we couldn't find. We kept getting conflicting information that she was there. No, she wasn't. And, you know, now she's here. No, she's not. We found her. Don't worry. She's fine. Then it was just so disheartening for the whole entire family that they couldn't find Joanne and confirm it. And, you know, in all the hospitals in the area, they weren't able to find her there either. But yet we were told that she was life-flighted to the hospital by a local who was there when she got flown out. And who he is, I haven't found out his name yet. So who knows if that was accurate information or not. It was just very confusing.
Joanne was actually in the church, and she had her family with her. And we have pictures of the family and Joanne on Agenda 21 Radio. Beautiful lady, beautiful family.
She is.
So tell us what you know, and you know, how did you find out that she was a victim actually in the church at the time?
Her best friend had found out that she was shot, and she texted me because she knew how close I was to Joanne as well. And Joanne was in the church towards the back of the church, according to someone that I spoke to in all of this time. They knew where Joanne sat, apparently. So what happened was, when the shooting began, the little girl, well, I've got to backtrack, little girl, her other little girl was 9 years old, Rihanna, and she was standing or sitting beside her mom when all this happened. Well, her glasses were shot off of her face by a bullet, and her mother threw her to the ground and told her to hide. And so that was the first thing that I heard when I got to the hospital from Rihanna. She was so traumatized. She was just sitting there quietly trying to play on her phone on a game, I guess, trying to disconnect. And I asked her what happened, and that was the first thing she said was, "I didn't get shot because Mama threw me on the ground." And so she knew, you know, her mom was saving her life.
No, but her mom was not present at the hospital then.
No, her mom was the one that was shot. Her mom proceeded during the shooting, after she threw her on the ground, to scoop up her other three that were right next to her, 7-year-old Emily, 5-year-old Ryland, and 5-year-old Brooke. And she literally shielded them with her body. She became a human shield and covered them, because she said at the end, Rihanna told me, she said at the end, when, you know, she looked at her mom, she said, "She wouldn't talk to me. I tried to talk to her and she wouldn't talk to me back. And Brookie wouldn't talk to me back either." She said, she didn't mention Ryland, but she said Emily, the 7-year-old who also died in the hospital, she said she was screaming. She was screaming, "Why is this happening? Why is this happening?" just over and over. And you can only imagine how traumatizing it is for these babies.
Now, the situation, the young boy is in surgery. Is that correct? Did he survive?
Ryland survived. He sustained multiple wounds. He had both of his femurs repaired. He's got plates and, you know, all kinds of metal in him now, putting those bones back together. His hip had to be repaired, his bowel, his arm. They thought that they were going to have to amputate for a long time his arm, but they ended up taking a vein, pardon me, from his leg and repairing the arm, so they're hoping they're going to be able to save that. But he's got a very, very hard prognosis ahead of him, long road of rehab and recovery.
Well, and again, you know, there's where is Joanne at this point? That's one of the bigger questions, I think.
That is a huge question, and that's what made me start looking at this situation, saying there's too many red flags, and I couldn't let it set. Joanne's husband is reported to have run down to the church and have gone in and looked for his family. And the only one that he found in the church was Ryland. the five-year-old, they were all scooped up together. They should have been in a pile. And according to the way the story pans out now, they're saying that Joanne took all of the bullets, and all of the bullets went through her to her children. So that's the story that they're saying. So if that's true, that they're confirming, you know, then they should have been right there. Mm-hmm. Because he stayed with Ryland until he was life-lighted. And we all know how critical his condition was. So it had to be very, very quickly. We don't have a time on what time he arrived. We don't know exactly. But knowing what we know, it had to be very, very soon. Because Ryland's alive. They got him to the hospital. Where was everybody else? There was no one around him. Joanne and Brooke were gone. I haven't even heard him mention Emily. He just said all he found was Ryland.
Now, one of the things that's kind of interesting here is that Chris Ward, who is the father in all this, was allegedly accused at the very beginning by some news sources out there of actually being one of the shooters. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what we heard. When we were at the hospital, my daughter's on all kinds of social media networks. She's 16, and she goes, Mom, it's trending that Chris Ward is the shooter, and he's standing right there, bawling his eyes out, you know, for his family. We're sitting there trying to console him. He's trying to, you know, compose himself. No, he's not the shooter. It's obvious.
And, well, I mean, this kind of went around for a while because I remember hearing about his name. I wasn't associating at the time because I'm looking at different things. A name on a shooter early on doesn't mean anything to me. But obviously, this must have been something. I know that some reporters went with it. And basically, did he know about this? How did he find out that he was probably maybe being named as a perp?
Well, truth be told, I don't even know if anyone told him because he was so distraught. I really don't even. I think he may have found out later because he was just concerned about his daughter and his other two children there in the hospital, that he didn't even care what was going on. So nothing mattered at that point.
Hmm. Well, it's always interesting.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, in these kind of circumstances that certain names do appear in these kind of operations, in my opinion. And these are the kind of things we look for as part of maybe a bigger picture. So I bring that out. And again, Chris Ward is not a suspect. He was not a shooter there. He was a first responder, it sounds like to me.
Right.
Did he ever say anything about what he found when he got in the church? Obviously several minutes had gone by, but it seems to me he kind of got there pretty quickly.
He got there very soon after, but there's so many people that won't talk about what they saw, even him. And he may be talking about it to his family now that everything's starting to calm down, but he's been a basket case. He has been a mess. And so that's just one of those things that you can't pry about, you know. I don't know what his report is about what he saw. He just knows he didn't see his family except for Ryland. So that's the one thing that is concerning for me and for everybody else. Where were they? This soon after the shooting, why wasn't he able to find his family?
Mm-hmm.
And there may be answers to that. I don't know, you know, but it's alarming.
Now, some of the other things that we've been hearing, and I don't know if you can verify that, is that at the time when all this is going down, they were taking, apparently, there's discussion on many different fronts from my sources that they were taking bodies out, basically, of a crime scene. Is that correct? Is that what you've heard?
Well, that's what had to happen. If she wasn't there with her son, if he found him inside and carried him outside, then where were they? That's the problem. Where were they? They were together. They were piled on top of each other. That's the narrative that they're telling us, that they found them together. And they're confirming that her body took all of the shots. Then where was she? And why was a dead body moved that quickly before an investigation was able even to be taken place? Was she alive? I doubt it. If she shielded three children that took the bullets? I doubt she was alive.
Now, do you recall hearing all the helicopters come in to life flight people out?
No, I didn't hear them. I wasn't there.
So then...
I didn't even see them. I think everybody, by the time we heard, I think everyone had been life flighted out. Because when we left, there were news crews everywhere. I mean, we couldn't believe how many people were there. And I wish I had a time to tell you, because it was soon after the shooting that all the news crews were headed out there.
Hmm.
Well, there were so many already there.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting, the timing of all that. And we're trying to get, find out a time frame by which all this is happening. And, mm-hmm. The time frame that, when you arrived, did you go to the church or did you just go to the hospital?
No, I tried to go to the church, but I realized Joanne wasn't there, nor her family, and I went immediately to the hospital. So I have to go drive through Sutherland Springs to get to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't believe how many emergency crews and reporters were already there. That was the other thing. They were there very, very quickly. So I thought, man, how much did I miss? And so, in the hysteria of it all, I didn't even think to look at my phone to see what time I got that call on Sunday.
Well, that's kind of interesting that they were there so quickly. That kind of gets into my realm a lot when I start to hear these kind of things, that the arrival, and again, they'd have to come from quite a distance, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, there's local... emergency that they could have called, fire departments and everything. Those are in the surrounding towns. They're, like you said, 15 to 20 minutes away. So if they use just those, that could be quite a few. I'm sure every unit in the area was dispatched.
Mm-hmm. Well, the situation, I don't know if you've heard this before, but there's a woman out, and we had the video up on our program, and in fact I think I might play just a few minutes of it. Have you heard this woman discussing about that she was saying that there's somebody that was up apparently on top of the roof and shooting down at the parishioners? Have you heard that?
That is just mind-blowing to me, really, truly, because I don't understand how it can happen. I've honestly never been inside the church,
mm-hmm.
so I don't know if they have maybe a skylight. I don't know how that could have happened.
Well,
it's not that big of a church.
Right. Well, let me play about a minute of this so people can get the idea of what's happening. This is from a victim, and I don't even have her name. They don't list her name here, but she's definitely wounded and not well. Let's see what they have to say here. This is.
Well, I heard a gunshot wounds coming from the roof. I just didn't hear them. I saw them. And people went down because we were singing a new song. The two guys at our front and the lady, they got shot. That's when after the third time that the man went on inside. But first, it started out with
three times? He went in three times?
No, he went in one time. Two times he was on top of the roof where he loaded his gun up there. His shotgun, he loaded it two times. When he got done with that, on top of the roof at the church, he was on top. He was shooting down, that's why I got shot back here, because I was laying like this. He was shooting the shots down on the floor in the church. And the kids were all scattered on the bottom of the benches.
Are you sure he was on the roof?
He was on the roof. He was on the roof. He was shooting from up. He was on the roof. Me and him, we know he was on the roof. The shots were coming from on top of the roof. They were not coming from anywhere else. He has to be on top. If you can see the shots coming to the floor, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, he's got to be on top of you. And I could see the bullets flying like that, hitting the ground. I could see, the shots. You can see when they split the wood or the carpet. You could see them going like that, all over. I could feel them, pass right by my ear. Ta, 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 ta. And he wouldn't stop. He would not stop. It went on for about 10 minutes. And he stopped, and everybody thought, it's going to be okay. Everybody's going to be okay. And then he started again. He reloaded the shotgun up there, reloaded the shotgun, and started shooting again. And there was no police, nobody around. Nobody could hear us. Nobody saw what was going on. Nobody saw him on top of the roof.
That's pretty telling information, isn't it?
My God. How did he get on the roof, and how did he shoot from the from the outside to the inside? I wish I knew the architecture of that church.
Yeah. Now, is this the first time you've heard this? Is this the first time you've heard this?
Yeah, when Dave Hodges told me that, God, it's shocking.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's very compelling. This is according to IntelliHub, this is Steve Shepard Ambulus. He is the one who put this out yesterday. It's an interview that was done by ABC News from the hospital. The woman is not identified, and we're trying to find out the actual name of her, but it's clear she's got a particular type of wounds that look like they came from, you know, she's been shot in the shoulder, and the bullet has apparently gone from the top of her shoulder down to her torso. So that would indicate that somebody was shooting on top rather than, and of course, this is what her testimony is. But this is very unusual. Now, we've heard that some of the stories that we've got going around out there is that there were actually more than one shooter. There were two shooters and maybe even a third shooter. Is that stuff that you're hearing there in town as well?
Yeah, we're hearing that as well. But Rihanna only talked about one shooter. She said that there was only one. She said he was wearing all black. I told her, I asked her, what did he look like? She said he was wearing all black, and he had a black and white face mask on.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she saw him put the gun to his head. And I said, honey, I'm so sorry you saw that. You know, what happened after that? Did he do that? Did he shoot himself? And she, you know, kind of clammed up and just shook her head, yes. And I said, honey, I'm so sorry you had to see that. And I feel bad because I didn't want to plant information in her. So, you know, she didn't tell me he shot himself. She just agreed because she just immediately clammed up. And I felt like this is my time that I'm trying to get the story from her. And I know it's probably going to start changing here in a few hours.
Right, right.
I wanted to find out as much as I could. And she agreed that he shot himself. But, you know, that's not what she spoke. That's not what she told me. Mm-hmm. But with her own words, that's what she agreed to. So, who knows?
There's a picture of the four of them, and she's the older girl on the left. Is that correct?
Right, right. Okay. That's Rihanna.
And the boy is Ryan. Is that who it is?
Ryland.
Ryland, okay. Mm-hmm. Ryland. Yeah. And, of course, it's a beautiful picture of the family. It's unfortunate about the other two girls.
Precious, precious children. I mean, she was the best mother you could have ever wanted for your children. I mean, she put them first in everything she did. You know, I'd be at lunch with her, and it was hilarious because we'd be in the middle of a great conversation. And if the children were doing the least thing, I mean, she was big on them having manners, never putting their feet on the table, never running around. You know, if one of them even moved the wrong way, she was like, no, stay here, you know, very calm. And the children listened to her and obeyed. They were so sweet with each other. They had the best relationship. She was like an amazing mother, which makes this thing so much harder.
Oh, sure. I can understand. What about your husband? What role did he play in all this? How did he find out about it, and what did he do?
He found out about it when I got the call. And he was just going to, you know, help me in whatever I chose to do, whether I was going to go and help with, you know, everything that was going on with the shooting, or if I was going to go and be at the hospital. He was just going to support me there. But he ended up staying behind because he knew that it would take hours and hours, and we were down to one vehicle that day. So we told him, just stay here, be here if the town needs you.
Now, what happened with the with law enforcement, and what is your understanding about how law enforcement got there to help out? Who were the first responders, I guess, is the big question.
I'm not exactly sure. I don't really have information on what kind of law enforcement got there first. My friends who were there, they actually saw, you know, people getting there fairly quickly. And in my opinion, I have a lot of questions. because these people, you know, the husband, he was right down the road from when the shooting happened, and he was able to run into the church building. So apparently there wasn't anyone keeping him from going in. So I don't really know when law enforcement got there. He got there fairly fast. It's hard to draw the picture.
Was he surprised? And this is the husband of Joanne Ward, Chris Ward, we're talking
yes.
about, right? And well, he got in the church, yet he couldn't find his other two daughters and his wife.
Right.
They were gone at that time.
He said the only one he found was Ryland.
So obviously, I mean, it must have shaken him up. But again, were there people taking that? If their bodies were not in the church, they must have been removed.
Exactly. That's the problem. Where did they go? Why couldn't he find them?
Now, are other families experiencing the same thing? And have they experienced the same thing about they can't account for their bodies or their? And how are they identifying the bodies?
Yeah, that's the only thing I know about the problems they're having is that my two friends that went to help with the whole center that they were setting up, I don't know if it was a civic center, I don't know what you call it down there, because I'm not involved in this little town's comings and goings. You know, I've never even visited their museum. They have a teeny tiny museum. I don't have any idea. But they said wherever they were set up, they said they were there looking for their friends, the Rodriguezes. And when they were finally able to view their body and identify them, they weren't even shown the body. They were identified with a picture, both of them. So they said that they've been identified, but it's been with a picture. And that's the same thing that happened with Joanne's family that night. Once her body was finally located, we waited at the hospital all day long looking for her. We finally find later that night, no, Joanne wasn't life-flighted. She's been here all along. And
she was in the hospital all along?
No, she was back at the church all along. And, you know,
there's something wrong with that story. Yeah.
Yeah. So confusing. Even the daughter, even the 9-year-old daughter says that she saw her mom get on a helicopter. So, how? What did she confuse it? Did she think it was someone else? How did she think that was her mother? She knows her mom.
You would know if your mom's getting on a helicopter.
Darn
what about
right.
the other two girls? Were they identified, and where were they located?
Oh, the one was screaming, "Why is this happening?" And I don't have any idea when she was located or identified. And then Brooke was just under Joanne, according to what the authorities have told the family. That's only the authorities, because the eyewitness, the husband that went in looking for them, didn't see that.
He didn't even see them.
No, period.
Wow.
So they when they went to identify Joanne that night, it was her brother apparently, and they said no, you can't identify her. It has to be the husband. So they wouldn't let her immediate family identify her, and apparently they let her them identify them by something, you know, just with a tattoo. They didn't let him see her body. They just let him see a tattoo. Well, all day long, they were trying to contact us at the hospital saying they want pictures. You know, the authorities want pictures of anything that can distinguish your loved one. So we were all sending pictures of her tattoos. I sent them pictures of her, pictures of, you know, her daughter. And they were the two that were missing. So, of course, we're wanting to find them. We're wanting to help that effort. And sure enough, that night, the brother was only allowed to identify her by a tattoo. Nothing else.
Did anybody see, or does anybody know, the hero in all this, the man who had his own AR-15 and was confronting the shooter outside? Does anybody know who this man is?
No, I don't. I don't. I've read that he was related to one of the women in the service. Or I don't. I'm not sure who that was. I've tried not. I've tried to stay off of, you know, the media. I've posted things on my own Facebook, just to help Joanne's legacy live on, mm-hmm. because, you know, just for people to know how loving she was, how much she loved God, things like that. But I haven't spoken about these. I haven't asked these difficult questions on my page at all.
Now, what about the? Well, of course, the guy was a plumber. He's the guy who took the took him down. He was an NRA man. His name is Stephen Williford. He was the armed citizen who shot the church shooters, they say. But, you know, we're still getting reports of multiple shooters here at Agenda 21 Radio, and I know other sources are too. And we're trying not to rumor monger or anything like that. We're just trying to get the facts right. out. And then, right. you know, we get all of a sudden this information coming from, and actually it was an NBC report, not an ABC, but an NBC report of this woman. And you heard it. It's claiming that someone is up on the roof, and she mentioned shotgun. We've heard the term shotgun many times, actually, in the first few hours of this incident. We were hearing that. We were hearing multiple shooters, not just one. But now when you talked about one of the girls saw this man take a gun, put it to his head, and apparently commit suicide in the church,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that brings up another angle.
Sure does.
If there was a second shooter, then he got in the truck and took off. If the scenario holds true here, that if the shooter, one of the shooters, commits suicide right in front of her, the other guy's taken off in the truck, and that's certainly apparently who Stephen Williford confronted.
Yeah, if he did that, it raises a lot of questions now.
And this guy that who did the shooting, this Kelly guy. You know, I don't know if you understand, like, from where we come from, we've been following these shootings now for, I've been following these for almost 20 years, and doing detailed research and information about these, and this particular shooting, and especially this particular suspect, this Kelly guy, has many, many similarities, especially to two very infamous mass shootings, and that was the one in Aurora, Colorado, and also the one just actually a month after that at the Sikh Temple in Wisconsin. In which everybody was apparently had something to do with the military, had something to do with, and especially Holmes, and he had a great deal to do with certain psychological operations going on with the Air Force specifically. We'll put that out there. And then in the case of Wade Page, who was the Sikh temple shooter, he had the same sort of thing going on. All of them had a lot of drug involvement, and it's very, very clear. And when you take a look at the picture of Kelly, he's under the influence of obviously marijuana and other probably psychotropic meds. And again, that's my specialty, to understand those symptomologies. And he's undergone many things as well. And it's kind of interesting. They are all the activities about their psychological associations and psychological operations, if you will, center around anywhere between 2010 and 2012. And in fact, Kelly was quite abusive. He seemed to me to be a real candidate for certain type of psychological operations, including killings, because he was so violent. But again, that was all around 2012 when he was being thrown out of the military, but also going to mental institutions and escaping mental institutions. And all of a sudden, he shows up here after being involved with people like the Insane Clown Posse and Antifa. We know the connection that's there. And then all of a sudden, he's now involved with this shooting. So, see, to me, it's just a consistent pattern of what's going on, just even with these three shootings. But remember, with the Obama era, they had 114 mass shootings in 8 years of Obama, three or more being murdered at a scene. So I get a little bit, curious, obviously, about these things that are going on, about what's being reported, what's not being reported. And I have some interesting questions about the FBI and law enforcement and about how they've been behaving as well. And I don't know if you do or other people, but it seems like they have as well.
My biggest question on why the FBI is doing what they're doing was whenever I heard just recently that the FBI is actually telling the family whether their loved ones are going to have an open or closed casket. They have been talking about how they've decided that Joanne can have an open casket well, why are they in charge of that? And is that something that's normal? That just sounds like it should be something between the family and the funeral home. That's a personal choice for the family. Why is the FBI controlling it?
Well, I guess, and again, it seems to me that if the FBI is in charge, why are they in charge? And if they are in charge, it usually has to do with national security. And is this a terrorist attack?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if why the sheriff would want to allow the FBI to have that kind of measure of discretion. That's my opinion. I don't understand why that all works that way. He's probably short on law enforcement, and the FBI has the people available, which I find pretty amazing. It seems to me that the reports that I got, the FBI were right on the scene when just within a half an hour, maybe at the most, of this whole thing happening, which I find very interesting that the FBI would come so quickly.
Yeah, I do too. And that's just concerning all the way around. How did they get there that quickly? I wasn't aware we had an FBI office that close.
Right. When it's a couple hours or an hour away, and all of a sudden they show up within minutes of a shooting, you have to kind of wonder why the FBI is there. And they seem
to be... because there's not like a lot of places that they would need to be in this small remote area.
And the apparently all the news and information is now being controlled by the FBI, nothing from any other sources?
I'm not aware.
The narrative is... to me, it's pretty obvious the narrative is being set by the FBI, but...
they've got their hand in everything. I mean, the burials, the open or closed caskets, why do they have their hand in that? I just really want that answer. Mm-hmm. I just want to know, is that something that's common in an FBI investigation? And why is it FBI in the first place?
Yeah, and I understand it's a mass shooting and everything. Now, let's get back to the actual, what you know about the shooter. Not the shooter, but the Mr. Williford, who's the hero in all this. That in shooting this Devin Patrick Kelly. And you say you have, and of course, you're fairly new to the community, but you had never had any acquaintance with this man. In my understanding, I've talked to other people that are close, and they don't know this man that well.
No, I have not met one person who knows who he is yet. But then again, I haven't really tried to reach out and talk either. So I need to do that in the next coming days. I need to dig and find out who knew him and who knew. I want to also know who knows the woman that was shot, from the roof. I want to know who she is.
Right.
I want to confirm, that she was actually a member of the community.
Yeah. These are all the big questions that are still, and again, we're not trying, we're asking questions, ladies and gentlemen. We've got the tinfoil hat on. And because we want the truth. And, we're not making accusations at this point in time other than we're just trying to seek the truth. And it seems that – and I understand when you have these kind of mass casualty events, I understand what goes on and how the information is supposed to get out and how it's supposed to be funneled to the resources that you have. And it seems to me that the FBI does not seem to – in my opinion, the FBI has not been very, very upfront and truthful in the past 8 years. Is there a continuation of that behavior going on in this mass shooting? And why the mass shooting taking place? And it's what's very, very evident to me that there's a psyop going on with this so-called Devin Patrick Kelly. That's just my opinion. But it's very, very consistent because what we did here, and we still even haven't sussed this all out, is that apparently, again, just as in the case of what we saw in so many other mass shootings, this Devin Patrick Kelly put a gun to his head and killed himself in the truck.
Mm.
That is something we don't know for sure. And in fact, I did see some video this morning of Mr. Williford being questioned by the police. And actually, I think the camera was being held by Johnny, the driver. And the camera, he was talking to a police officer, and he said he took aim on him. He knew he hit him a couple of times, didn't know if, in fact, he died because of his bullet wounds in the truck. But from official sources, the police, the sheriff, they said actually he committed suicide in the truck.
Hmm.
So we get the suicide story first from Joanne's daughter, who was right there in the church, and now we get a suicide story about him in the truck. So there's a lot of things that need to be pulled together here. And again, what we do know is we have a lot of people that are dead. We do know that we have a suspect that's in the shooting that's done that matches almost exactly what happened in places like Aurora and what happened in places like the Sikh Temple and in others around the nation. And he's dead. You know, the perp is dead. Now, in the case of Kelly, or in the case of Aurora, Holmes did not die, but when they found him, he was in a stupor. Could have been dead. You know, that's, and again, there are other connections that are just so strong to all three, but then there's other shooters out there that did the same exact thing. So we're seeing a continuation of what we saw with the mass murders going on with Obama, continuing it on now. And, of course, the links and connections to people like Devin Patrick Kelly, to Antifa, to like the Insane Clown Posse, to all these white supremacist hate groups, to all, you know, Antifa and Black Lives Matter, all these groups are all the same. They just change the verbiage on, they're all hate groups and they're all into doing the same sort of thing. So now you have to wonder, where does all this come from? Who are the orders that they're following coming from? And that's the bigger question that we try and find out here on Agenda 21 Radio.
Well, I can't wait to find out myself.
I bet you can't. Now, what's going to happen? The husband has to be absolutely devastated, Chris Ward, about what's happening.
He's a mess. He's just a mess. It's going to take him a long time to recover from this one, if he does. He needs everyone's prayers.
Mm-hmm. And you've got now the older girl. She was not hurt.
Not at all. When I got to the hospital, I saw blood and on her boots and her pants. And I asked her if she was okay, and she said she was fine. She didn't get any injuries, and that's when she told me that she didn't get shot like everybody else because her mama threw her on the ground. So it's funny, because here's another thing that's weird that I didn't bring up with Dave Hodges. Some investigators came in very, very quickly, like right after I got to the hospital. They were there, and they wanted her boots and her pants. They said that it was evidence. And so they took the, even though she wasn't injured, she was in the shooting, and they were collecting the evidence, apparently. And they made her change. And she, you know, a hospital, you know, person gave her some scrubs to wear, and she wore some big baggy scrubs because they took her clothes and now, shoes.
And what were these, what agency were they from?
What's the question?
What was the agency these investigators were from?
They said that they were from, was it the sheriff's department? Yeah, they said that they were from the sheriff's department. So
it wasn't the FBI.
No, not that I know of. They didn't have any. I mean, they looked like they had local badges on. I didn't read them, you know. Mm-hmm. But I knew, I didn't recognize them as being DPS. I didn't recognize as being, you know, somebody like an FBI agent in regular clothing. They didn't show badge for that. They were just wearing their normal star on their, or badge, whatever it was, on their shirt. And they had their hats. So that's what makes me think that, you know, their cowboy hats, that it was in Texas. That's typically
Texas,
a sheriff's department.
The FBI doesn't wear cowboy hats.
Right.
Usually right. They don't. They wear the FBI ball cap, baseball cap or whatever. So this is now, what about for the entire community that you know of? Because this is something that you really have to pull together on. And my understanding, and I've seen the pictures, they've got a black draped fence up now all the way around it. And my understanding is that they're going to tear the church down and make it into a park or memorial, which is kind of typical of these kind of things. Any idea on when they are going to tear it down?
Yeah, we heard that was today.
Today?
How does that happen? How does that even happen so quickly? It hasn't even been a week since the massacre, and now they're tearing the church down. That, if anything, raises red flags. That alone should make you wonder, why are they getting rid of it so quickly? If they were going to get rid of it at all, why so quickly?
Well, yeah, and it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence that needs to be gathered, especially if you've got somebody that's been shooting from the roof or inside. And again, you don't know the architect. I don't know the architecture of the inside of the building. With somebody, you know, they have these ante rooms on top of the churches sometimes in the back, you know, where they put an organ or the choir sings or whatever. And it looks like they have a pretty high roof there. Maybe they can accommodate something like that. So maybe the shooter. In clear speculation, this woman from the NBC report was saying that maybe the shooter was up there, not the roof, you know. But it's
right.
You know, and she was pretty panicked when you can see it on her face that she's what she's talking about. So the speculation is going to swirl around this. Why destroy the facility at this point in time if, in fact, they're going to do it today? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
That's
still a crime scene, and will be for probably, it could be for years going forward. Why destroy it now?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I mean, if it was a bad memory, I think they're using the story that it's too much for the pastor. It's just too much for him to deal with. And that still doesn't make sense why they would tear a whole entire building down. Doesn't a church have to get together and vote on that? Don't they have to decide whether they want to rebuild, remodel? You got to understand, this is a really tiny town. They don't have the budget to do things like that. So what is the state doing? Saying, okay, we will build you a new church? That's my guess. Are they saying, we'll give you a new... Is the government saying that?
Yeah.
Are they taking this church away from people?
None of the tearing down of the church makes any sense to me. If it's they're against, we'll tear it down in 3 or 4 years, that might make a little bit more sense. But right now you've got a whole heck of a lot of things going on that need to be addressed in terms of evidence. It seems to me like they're trying to destroy the evidence more than anything. And they're in a quick hurry to do it. Hello.
Yes. You know, that is very concerning.
Yeah. So have you been getting any kind of derogatory comments coming to you from Facebook and so on? Because I'm getting a whole slew of them right now.
I bet.
And so, I'm just sort of getting all these crazy things. You know, and ladies and gentlemen, we're just trying to find out the truth. And unfortunately, it's uncomfortable to be talking about these kind of things because you can't really trust. Unfortunately, and I'm saying this straight up, you cannot trust the FBI. And I think you just take a look at James Comey and when you take a look at Robert Mueller and look at the past history of the excuses that the FBI trying to suppress any information about ISIS and so on involved with any of these kind of shootings. This, to me, I think is the most telling thing of all, is that you have an FBI that's trying to cover. And if they're doing it right now, that's, again, more evidence. I don't think that the FBI will survive any kind of scrutiny in this issue. I really don't think they will.
That's why there's so much to cover up.
Right.
And no, I am not getting anything derogatory on Facebook. I'm not getting anything from anyone I'm talking to, except that when I do ask questions, the people in this area are not asking the same questions. They seem to me like an ostrich with their head in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know to wonder why their bodies were matched by pictures. They don't know to ask, why is this fence being put up all around? Because it just, if the authorities tell us, we believe it. That's the the mentality, basically. And if they're asking questions, I'm not aware of it yet because I haven't been in contact with that many people. So I hope they are. I really do. But I know that I'll be asking questions. It's just hard. It's very, very hard to ask these questions publicly because, you know, you're labeled a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
You're labeled
I know that
wacko.
Feeling. Right. I know that feeling. Listen, Vonda, we have to go now. We're running out of time, and I've really enjoyed this. We will definitely stay in touch and, bring out more information about what's been going on there in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Thank you very much for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Awesome. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. More to come here on Agenda 21 Radio. And visit our website, agenda21radio.news. That's agenda21radio.news. And stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.